Welcome to this week's journalism.co.uk podcast with me, Caroline Scott. Today we'll be looking at how news organisations from around the world are reporting on the refugee crisis using Periscope and Snapchat. Video streaming apps are allowing journalists to get inside the story at ground level, capturing the raw, unedited footage of refugees as they flee their home countries in search for a better life. Roving digital reporter Ravin Sampat is following the team making the next BBC Panorama documentary about the crisis. Speaking from the Hungarian border, he explains how he aims to use Snapchat to engage the younger generation in the story.
The BBC is really keen to reach younger audiences, you know, 18 to 35 especially. So I came up with this idea. You know, I went to my editor and I said, look, why don't we try something new? How can we tell the story differently for a new audience? And eventually, would that audience then turn around and say, do you know what? I've just followed this story on another platform. I'm actually going to watch that Panorama episode now because I've just seen what they've done all the way there.
The platform allows the BBC to keep followers of their Snapchat account up to date with what Ravin and his colleagues are experiencing in Europe, following the story as it unfolds.
What I've done is I've experimented. I've got the ball and I've run with it. It's fascinating that we can document it on something like Snapchat. And I know Snapchat disappears after 24 hours, but I think that kind of was the whole point. The whole point was this is a day-by-day journey. If you're capturing a great moment, it doesn't matter how it's been captured. It's just the moment that matters.
The BBC's coverage on Snapchat has gained an increasing amount of interest since the beginning of September, and Ravin hopes this success will continue into other stories covered digitally by the broadcaster.
I've set up a BBC Panorama Snapchat account. I'm hoping the next team learn from me. You know, they should say, all right, we're going to do this within this programme now. And then I'll go and tell them, this is what you do. And they'll go out and hopefully the presenters will do it themselves.
BBC Panorama presenter John Sweeney has noticed the benefits of the platform whilst reporting.
Now, when we're filming, John does turn around to me quite often. He says, do you reckon we can make a mobile first video? I never thought he'd say that. The whole point of this is he's now thinking in a digital way. So he's saying, listen, should we put that on Snapchat? I think this is a really good snap. I think people would want to see something like this. And that's important, that the person that we're following on the journey, the presenter, is really into it themselves. Hopefully that will have an influence on other programme makers as well.
Ravin aims to collate all his content into a short documentary, much like Paul Ronsheimer has done with the Periscope footage he filmed for German newspaper Bild. Paul decided to travel with a group of Syrian refugees from the Greek island of Kos across Europe to Germany. As opposed to just filing copy as he travelled, Paul decided to broadcast all the action live using Periscope, where he gained a large following.
I decided to join refugees on the dangerous journey to Germany. So I started with them in Kos at the beach, went to Athens, Macedonia, Serbia, Hungary, and at the end, Germany. During the trip, it was just great to see how much interest there was in this story because I gained 33,000 followers on Periscope. I had sometimes between 5,000 or 6,000 live viewers, and one video was replayed 90,000 times. So it was a big interest, and first time for me it showed how great Periscope is.
Periscope allows viewers to comment on the broadcasted footage, directly interacting with the people involved in the story. Paul believes this helped the audience to engage with the footage and learn more about what was happening.
I think it's very important, and it's the most important point on Periscope, especially on this live broadcasting, that you interact with the users. If you don't comment, the viewers, they have to feel that they are part of the story in the way. If you don't answer the questions, I think they will leave you and will not watch your Periscope again. First, I was afraid that there might be too many racist questions or really bad questions, but there were some. Why do they go to Germany? Why don't they stay in the country? But the main part of the question was really good. They asked, for example, why do they need a smartphone? Why is it so important for them? Can they explain more about what they went through in Aleppo? They asked very detailed questions about their family. I mean, I was with young people, young men. One of them left his wife in Aleppo, so he has the possibility to explain. So it was really, really good to see what the people asked. And also, I think sometimes as a reporter, if you're so deep inside the story and you're following with them and you're with them all the time, sometimes you forget to ask the basic questions again, you know. That was really good and great interaction with the users. And I could see that lots of people always came back to my Periscope. So I saw people really becoming kind of a fan of the story of Firas and the Syrians. And got a lot of emails, a lot of tweets saying, thank you so much, you know, now we understand this refugee problem better. And it was great that we were able to ask him our questions. So this personalization and this interaction, I think, helped a lot.
Broadcasting on only a small mobile device allowed Paul to report intimately without drawing too much attention to himself, which may have caused him problems reporting during the journey.
We came to Cork with a camera guy and a photographer, so we were three people at the beginning. But when we crossed the borders, or the illegal borders, we decided that they take the official way and I joined the refugees alone, only with my smartphone. So the refugees knew that I was a journalist and it was, everything was clear. But for example, when we came to Serbia and we saw police, I think we would have had big problems if there was a camera team and a videographer and they see a big camera. So I was able to hide my smartphone in a way and just be with them. I mean, I never lied. I just said nothing. But when they were stopped by the police, I was in the background. I was able to film a little bit hidden. And at the same time, I was kind of always inside the stories. It was nothing special that there was a journalist with them. I saw everything how it was.
This ability to stay inside the story, travelling with the refugees, allowed Paul to gain their respect, consequently getting more intimate footage for the viewers back home.
I was always with them, you know. It was not like, okay, now you take the illegal border crossing and we meet at the other border again. They felt like I was part of them in a way. Sure, they knew I was a journalist and not a refugee, but I spent so much time with them. You know, it's a question of respect as well. They saw that I really wanted to show how it is. I didn't just stay at a border and interview them. I told them, listen, I want to follow you. I want to be with you all the time. And I want to kind of feel how it is, you know, to cross these borders all the time. And then they felt comfortable to talk in dangerous situations. You know, I wouldn't ask them for an interview. But after that, I said, listen, how was it? Can you explain to us? And they were really free to speak, and they were really open and educated, and the English was perfect, so that was great luck as well. In general, I think the smartphone helped. I was amazed about the quality of the smartphone. I only had an iPhone 6, and so easy to film. Just need to put your smartphone on, and also in this situation when there was heavy rain, and they were attacked, and there were a lot of critical situations. And it helped because it's a small phone. It's like they were used to it. It's not like a big TV camera. And I think, yeah, that was something very special on this report.
As Paul travelled with the same refugees, his viewers on Periscope became so engaged with the people he was interviewing that they wanted to know more after he'd finished reporting on them.
It's interesting to see still now the people are asking me what's happening with Firas. So this is a refugee I followed. So I'm trying to see him again and also to follow up on this story because the people are still asking me what's going on with him.
New York-based magazine Time has also been experimenting with Periscope during the refugee crisis. Tyler Borchess, Senior Audience Strategy Editor, believes using the platform was an inevitable step forward for the publication.
Time is committed to telling the story across all of the platforms that we have available to us. We're constantly experimenting with new storytelling tools. And so we were at a point where we've been following the story so closely that we were looking for new ways to tell it. We had Patrick Witte on assignment in the region, and we realized we had never Periscoped before, and that this was the perfect time to try that for the first time because it fits into our overall content coverage so well because it brings a whole new perspective to the story. I think this experience has demonstrated to our newsroom that people want an authentic perspective on the story, on the ground. You know, people have seen the numbers about the crisis. They've seen the migration maps. What they want to see more than anything are the faces behind this story. And that's what Periscope let us do, is tell individual, unedited stories. We see Periscope as a window to the world. A really powerful storytelling tool.
Although Time faced challenges whilst reporting, the publication found the raw, unedited material gained a lot of attention in the 24 hours after it was broadcast.
One of the challenges that we immediately face were just like logistics. You know, Patrick and I were in constant communication via WhatsApp, setting the whole thing up. And we were learning as we go. One of the first things we learned was that one of our biggest challenges was just going to be getting a reliable internet connection. So we finally got that, but the broadcast went out because of a lack of connection sooner than we had hoped. So this was only a couple minutes long, and yet 24 hours after we ended the broadcast, we had gotten over 117,000 hearts on it. We gained over 5,400 followers. We had 1,400 live viewers, but, and this is my favorite statistic, after just 24 hours, we had 46,000 replay viewers, which I think goes contrary to the traditional narrative about Periscope, about it being so ephemeral and disappearing so quickly, which is true. But it showed us that the vast majority of people who found this Periscope were not actually watching live. They found it through our social media channels or through the Periscope app, and they were still very interested in watching it, even though they weren't getting the truly live experience.
Time reporter Patrick Whitty is heading back out to Europe today, where he hopes to experiment more with the features that Periscope offers.
We are going to experiment with interacting with viewers' questions and suggestions and all of that. We're also going to experiment with saving the videos and seeing if there's anything new and exciting we can do with those. So much more to come.
As the popularity of video streaming apps grow, along with the digital revolution in mobile technology, journalists have found a new way of telling stories. Although it is still early days, this is certainly a step forward for news organisations looking to engage people in a different way and investigate stories from ground level. For more podcasts from journalism.co.uk, please visit our website.